Missing this?
This is the dream. Shohi on Fringlord. Whether you're from Cushendall in Antrim or Mount Sine in Waterford, this is what it's all about.
So get this. The all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home. Featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis. Plus, almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free. Ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Yeah, you're welcome along to Monday Night Rugby. Rory O'Connor, the Irish Independence rugby correspondent, is on the line. Evening, Rory.
Hey, Nathan, how are you?
Very well. So today, a big step towards the restart of rugby on August 22nd. Leinster and Munster players back in training. Connacht and Ulster due to resume this day next week. I've been looking at some photographs and they haven't let themselves go. Johnny Sexton didn't miss arms day, that's for sure. Bloody hell, he looks in good shape.
Yeah, it's no surprise really. I mean, how and when would you let yourself go in this current climate or whatever? Like, it sounds like all they did was pump iron for the duration of the lockdown, and they got all their gym gear home, as we all heard during it all. So I'm sure they're delighted to be back. They're training in small groups this week and then expanding it. I think they're going to update. Like, they were going to go back pretty slowly. I'd imagine they may accelerate that given the updates from the government last Friday, and they may be able to do contact a little bit earlier than they were planned. I don't know if they'll have scope to squeeze in another game. I mean, like, maybe they're, you know, the 9 week lead in is ideally tailored to getting their bodies right because they've been off for so long. But the 22nd is what we're aiming for now. It seems a long way away, and watching other sports and other nations play rugby, it seems. You know, it's quite frustrating, I suppose, to have to wait that long. But at least they're back out there. I'm sure they've been gagging to get back, seeing their colleagues and their teammates. Like a lot of people who are working from home, it's not a career that really lends itself to it.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that 9 week lead in, and it is a proper pre-season. And it does appear that all the provinces basically treated the last few months as the off season. It wasn't a break and waiting the return, that they knew they were going to be out of action for a considerable period of time. So treated this as the off season, and also potentially, hopefully, all going well, heading into a very long season coming up that we could go from August right the way through for an awful lot of these elite players that will be playing international, could be playing lines. This could be a long 12, 13 months for a lot of these players, so they need to be right.
Yeah, it's a strange one because they were supposed to have the longest season after the World Cup. You know, that was supposed to, you know, I think the Pro 14 final was supposed to be last weekend. We'd be going to Australia now for a two-match tour, having started on June 16th. So yeah, the players have basically had their holidays in lockdown, which I'm sure they're not too happy about, not being able to go anywhere. But they've basically had their break. I'm sure they'll get some sort of a break during the season. But yeah, they're on the road now, potentially until August. There's big discussions underway at the moment to get the season aligned to, you know, plan out when internationals will be played. So really, there's no clarity beyond the end of this season that's currently suspended. There's no real clarity about how next season is going to look. There's no fixture list as such yet. So the world rugby say they'll have a plan in place for the rescheduled internationals by the end of this month. And we expect a plan for a kind of a schedule for the rest of rugby as well, which may see rugby shift to a summer schedule and start in January and finish in November, which might give them a break. So there's a couple of balls in the air, but we are seeing kind of the shape of what the end of this season, as the, you know, whatever's left of it or whatever they can salvage, will look like if, you know, there's no second wave and everything goes to plan as you know, from where we are now.
Yeah, it is a strange situation because so the players are back in training, preparing to finish the season just gone, and we should have the latter stages of a Pro 14 and a final, and hopefully then rolling on to the latter stages of the Heineken Champions Cup. So everything will continue as it was, but the transfer market is proceeding as if it was the summer. So the moves that were due to happen for next season are still happening, even though we haven't finished last season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And Munster are the big winners because they have Damian D'Allende and RG Snyman have arrived in Limerick. They've done their 2 weeks isolation. D'Allende's actually carried an injury, so he won't be back in full training. But they will have been in meeting a couple of their colleagues today for the first time. They've also got Matt Gallagher, an Irish qualified son of John Gallagher, the All Black World Cup winner in 87, who they've signed for Saracens, and Roman Salanoa, who they've lured from Leinster. So they've been bolstered. You know, they haven't really lost anyone in Munster. Sammy Arnold's gone. Connacht have lost a good chunk of players. They've added a couple of internal signings from other provinces. Leinster are pretty much as you were, except for the players they've lost to other provinces. They're extending Rob Kearney and Fergus McFadden's deals. And Ulster will have Ian Madigan on board and Albie Mathieson on board. So they'll be stronger as well. So, yeah, the conclusion, Munster must be just kicking themselves that they're out of Europe, because, you know, you throw in two World Cup winners of that calibre, you know, pretty much shoring up the major deficiency in the Munster Armoury in terms of the power game, and they'd have a good crack off anyone. And even like stuff like, you know, if Leinster play Saracens, you know, if that game goes ahead, and it's been earmarked for the weekend of the 18th of September, Saracens would have lost some players, like Will Skelton's gone to La Rochelle to join Ron Nogara, and a couple of others. Some will have stayed on. So like everything's changed. It's at the end of the same season, but really it's a new mini season with a bit of carry on from last year. It's very, very strange, but I'm sure we won't mind when it actually gets back to some form of normality.
It's good that Fergus McFadden should get to have his farewell on the pitch, even if it's not in front of the Leinster supporters. You mentioned Rob Kearney there as well. Is there any clarity at all as to what's happening with Rob Kearney and whether he'll continue on playing next season?
No, I think he wants to. He did an interview with the Irish Times right at the start of the lockdown, where he said he had hoped to continue on. It looks like he won't do at Leinster. It looks like his time there will come to an end whenever the season ends. And they both have a job to do to actually, you know, sign off in a final, because he needs to force his way into the team. But it would be a nice way for him to sign off with Leinster. He's, you know, an unbelievable servant to Leinster and Ireland. But I think, yeah, he had a few irons in the fire with regards to moving somewhere next season to finish off. You know, whether they've, you know, obviously the UK market has plummeted. France isn't looking as hot as it was either. You know, I don't know whether Japan or the USA would appeal to him. You know, he's a lot of business interests in this part of the world. I don't know if a far-flung move would really appeal to him right now. But, yeah, so I don't know if he will be kind of forced to give up a year or two earlier than he wanted to. If he does, he'll go out as one of Ireland's greats, you know, probably the greatest player ever playing in this position for Ireland, and with every honour in the game apart from the World Cup. So it's been a good innings, but I'm sure, like, you know, the standards that he holds and the success that he's had, he won't really be thinking about that sort of thing. He'll just want to get back into that Leinster team and you know, contribute to a double.
For an awful lot of these players, ending up with a 4-5 month break without a match could end up being a huge blessing as they head on into their careers. Probably a once in a lifetime opportunity for them to rest their bodies, and it means as well that an awful lot of players, I guess, that may have missed the end of a season are going to be back. And like Dan Levy, a player who we haven't seen in almost a year at this stage, if not more, is he going to be back now? Is he ready to go again?
It seems that way. I think Leinster are issuing an injury bulletin tomorrow. But the last one they issued a couple of weeks ago, about 6 weeks ago now, but time moves slowly in lockdown. And we're going off fairly limited information as it went, was that he would have returned by now. That obviously he'll have to go through, do the training that everyone else is doing, see how his knee holds up to all the things that they'll put him through. And he's got 9 more weeks to go. And I mean, to have him back, I think he's the one, he got talked about a little bit, but I think he was one of the key kind of tangible missing links between 18 and 19 when Ireland's form collapsed. I think he was a really, really important player for both Leinster and Ireland. And he's one of those players who physically, you know, will stand up to the likes of the English team that have bullied Ireland in the last year. So getting him back, and, you know, we just hope that he can get back to the level that he was at before all of this, that, you know, that his knee is, you know, that the injuries he suffered and the surgeries he underwent, you know, after that cataclysmic collision with Vian Herbst in that Leinster-Ulster game, a long time ago now, hasn't done any lasting damage to his body. So, yeah, he's back. Tyke Byrne, I think Munster issued an update today. Tyke Byrne, who had a very serious ankle injury from that Saracens game in January, I think, or December, January, he should be back as well. Joey Carby is a little bit later than that. He's targeting a September return, which is, you know, quite a little bit worrying, I think, to hear that he's not right yet, because, you know, they've been off for a long time. They haven't done, any contact.
Yeah, that's got to be hugely concerning, because we're talking 5 months between matches and he's still not going to be fit for the restart. And he's played, what, 2 games all season for Munster?
Yeah, and, you know, I remember Andy Farrell being asked about him just at the, I think it was the final press conference before everything shut down. And he said, yeah, we hope to have Joey for Australia, which would have been now, you know. So that's 3 months behind where the schedule is. And they say that the key thing with Joey is to get it right, because, you know, they'd probably rush, you know, I think he probably was rushed back for a World Cup, probably rushed himself back as well in the hope of playing at a World Cup and being part of something special. But that backfired. It seems to have done even more damage to that ankle, and he's got a wrist problem as well. So it is definitely a concern. And you know, Joey Carberry, like, you know, there's a large swathe of time now that's gone by without Joey Carberry playing rugby. Obviously, no one's playing rugby at the moment.
Mm.
But you would hope that maybe this period, like, you know, Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton have both spoken about how this period could end up extending their careers. You'd hope that someone who seems to be quite injury prone would be able to use this period to kind of, you know, do the prehab needed to strengthen his body so that he's more robust when he comes back. And the fact that he hasn't been able to get over that injury during that time, you know, has to be a bit of a concern, because he just hasn't played as much rugby as someone of his ability and his potential. You know, Ireland are missing out on, and Munster are missing out on a world-class player there, you know.
Mm. They are bringing in two world-class players that you touched on in Orgie Snyman and Damian D'Alande. Whose positions are most a threat with the arrival of those two?
It's a good question. I think, you know, they're probably a little bit underpowered in the second row. I think, like, D'Alande can play six. You know, I'm sure, you know, they can shift Peter O'Mahony to seven. They've got options in that back row. You know, they've got Ty Byrne there who can play six as well, whether he slips into the back row as well. You know, Billy Holland is probably a little bit at risk. He's been a great servant to the team, but maybe against the Saracens and the bigger teams, he might slightly be underpowered. He's not the biggest man, you know, but incredible servant and a really clever line-out forward. But Snyman will go straight into the team. There's no doubt about that. He won't be a bench option like he is with South Africa. And his carrying ability, his hands, his tackling, his, you know, he just will give him a presence. D'Alande, I mean, Rory Scannell, I remember doing a press conference just after D'Alande's move was announced and asking Scannell about it. He didn't seem too happy about his arrival. But it's like D'Alande can only really play one of, you know, pretty much one position. And you'd imagine that him and Chris Farrell would become Munster's bash brothers, you know, like two of the biggest, that must be one of the biggest centre partnerships in world rugby. And like, I interviewed Brian Habana a couple of weeks ago, and he's, you know, we asked him about D'Alande, and the first thing he said was he's got unbelievable hands. His passing range off both hands is incredible. So you give the size, the leadership that he has, the defensive abilities, but you throw in the fact that, you know, you can't just size him up for a tackle. You've got to watch what he's doing with his hands as well. He'll add another late layer of threat to what Munster are doing. So, yeah, I think Rory Scannell's position is probably under most threat there.
Things are obviously moving very fast off the pitch in terms of Irish rugby and the IRFU and the financial side. We saw the potential government funding, that 70 million to divide between the various sports on Friday, and we need to wait and see where that's going to break down, particularly for the FAI, the IRFU and the GAA. There's also now the potential of maybe some supporters being allowed back into stadiums, particularly as the year goes on, all going well. But there's no doubt that the IRFU are going to be taking a big hit this year, and there's negotiations ongoing with Rugby Players Ireland about potential pay cuts for the Irish rugby players. There have been cutbacks behind the scenes, it seems, in the IRFU. A lot of the staff down to a four-day week. Is there any sign of them coming to any sort of agreement with the players?
No, not really. Negotiations are ongoing, so I think we will get an agreement at the end of it, but I think we're some way away from that happening just yet. The Friday before last, the non-playing staff across the four provinces and within the IRFU were informed that they were being cut down to a four-day week. And the message on that call, I believe, was that the players would be expected to take a similar cut, which would manifest itself to 20%. That was reported the following day. Rugby Players Ireland issued a fairly strong statement saying they were blindsided by the news, and I think it probably got negotiations off on the wrong foot. So they have employed an accountant that who's going to be given access to the RFU's books, going to go through it. To just, you know, Philip Brown's message from the start of this has been, we are in real financial difficulty, but this is an organisation that posted record profits record revenues last year. And haven't produced their books, haven't done their AGM for this year, so we haven't seen the financial picture since. Now, you know, even when they welcomed the government's announcement, the 40 million will be split between the three major field sports NGBs on Friday, Philip Brown still made it clear that this will be a massively damaging year for Irish rugby financially because revenues have fallen off a cliff. So he's not backing down from that position that, that they're in real financial difficulty. Like, they have assets, they have very little borrowings. You know, Rugby Players Ireland, you know, the players contractually have no obligation to take a pay cut. But I do think they were willing to meet the RFU in some degree. Like, they've taken a pay deferral scheme. I think they know that, you know, across the country, that the economy is suffering, that people are, you know, this is the reality for people. And I don't think they were ever of a mind to kind of come into this and say no. I think they were just blindsided by poor communication from the RFU. And that kind of got negotiations off on the wrong foot. I would say a blanket 20% is probably not what will happen. I think what will happen is some form of a tiered arrangement, like the deferral scheme, where the biggest earners took the biggest cut to protect those on lower wages. And Jacob Stockdale, a couple of weeks ago, said that, you know, like, it wouldn't be fair on players on lower salaries, you know, to take the same cut as the players on the bigger salaries. So, but I think there's a lot of negotiations to go. I think there will be negotiations this week. And the RFU want to get this done by the end of the month, because the deferral scheme they put in place, which was between 10 and 50%, with the highest earners getting 50%, runs out at the end of this month. And they need something in place by then. So it depends on what Rugby Players Ireland find in those books, whether they agree that the RFU are in as bad a financial position as they say they are. They do have access to 9 million of World Rugby Fund as well, if they can show that they're in severe financial difficulty. I think they have to do the same with the government as well, to show that they're in jeopardy before they draw down those funds. So there's a bit of road to run, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure Rugby Players Ireland are aware of the optics of this as well, if the day-to-day members of staff are down to a four-day week. But at the same time, as you say, if they're looking at the accounts, they're going to be well positioned to see exactly where the IRFU are. In general, over the years, how have Rugby Players Ireland, the representative body, and the IRFU got along?
I think very well. I think, like, in recent years, certainly, you know, I think around the dawn of professionalism, there would have been a huge amount of tension there when the body was set up under Niall Woods, and it was called IRUPA. I think Niall Woods was the first CEO. He certainly was for a long time there. He's now an agent. So, like, I think there was a testing time there. Keith Wood would have led a lot of discussions about player image rights and bonuses and salaries, and the union would have dragged their feet on a lot of stuff right at the start. But I think in recent years, there's been a very good working relationship there. I think Rugby Players Ireland are quite on board, or have been quite on board, with the RFU's plan to become, like, the best place to play rugby in the world. And it's been quite symbiotic. And I think this has probably put a place of tension where no tension existed a few months ago. It's put the union, the players' union, in a position where they have to kind of have some difficult conversations with, you know, the kind of the patron of you know, it's a very strange system in Ireland where everyone works for the same. Even if you play for different provinces, you work for the union, and it's with the union that you're doing business. And it's a big test of Simon Keogh, the former Harlequins and Leinster player, who's the CEO there, and the kind of strong senior players like Johnny Sexton and Rob Kearney, who were heavily involved. I think they'll be at the forefront of this as well. As I say, and as you say, I don't think they have any problem taking a bit of pain. I think they didn't appreciate learning of the 20% figure through the media rather than at the table, and that probably soured things. But I think I would sense that an accommodation will be reached eventually. But I think, you know, I don't think that this is it's as cozy as maybe it once was, and maybe for the players that's no harm in the long term.
You touched on the new calendar there, so a restart on August 22nd, and seems to be a bit of a plan for the next 6, 7, 8 weeks in getting the cup competitions finished. I know there were negotiations with World Rugby around the international calendar and whether that would be all of October, November, or just November. Is there a consensus emerging that all the leading bodies have similar views on how the calendar should be? Do you think at the end of this we get a brand new year-round rugby calendar that both clubs and countries have bought into?
No. Unfortunately, it seemed to me like there was the talk was that they reached kind of some sort of arrangement and that everyone was on board, but that was before they'd actually talked to the clubs, and the French clubs in particular are very much against playing through the summer. And I think the RFU really should be as well, because I think it would be quite dangerous for the RFU to go up against the GAA during the strongest time, you know, of that season. I think there's definite fear there that, you know, for the four provinces, provinces, they risk being marginalised a little bit during the high summer if they're going, you know, if they're playing Pro 14 rugby, Pro 16 or Pro 18, depending on how many South Africans eventually end up in the competition, that they might lose a bit of their identity by moving out of a fairly, you know, strong traditional time of year that they play. You know, rugby is associated with certain times of year. It's one of the sports that gets us through those long, dark winter months. You know, the Champions Cup, you know, sits alongside the Premier League is kind of something for those kind of November, December, January windows. Obviously, that can change and people can come with it. But I do think if, say, Munster are at home on the same weekend as a Munster hurling final, that's going to be a bit of a challenge. So, basically, there's a proposal there that you go from January to November with the June or July summer tour window shifting to October. And then you play internationals from October and November. With the Lions when it's on, you know, the Lions in October in those years, and then a Nations Championship replacing the kind of once-off internationals, for want of a better word, friendlies that have been on, test/friendlies that have been on over the years. So I think that window will shift at some stage. I don't think it's fair to do it in a Lions year, given people will have booked their travel already, but I don't think it's really been, the Lions have been considered an awful lot. They're not very good. They don't seem very good at putting themselves in these conversations. So there is, as you say, there's a shape towards what the end of this season will look like. The Pro 14 have laid it out. They've put their dates in place. EPCR have not made an announcement yet, but I believe they have a plan in place to go 18th of September for the quarterfinals, the semifinals a week later, and the final in October on October 17th in Marseille for the Champions Cup. All dependent on borders being opened and all the other things that I'm sure, you know, every time you talk to someone at coronavirus, they throw in the usual caveats. But beyond that, it looks like the test window could run from like the 24th of October to the 5th of December, which would suit the RFU because it would get, you know, games played in the Aviva Stadium. But it remains to be seen, you know, whether the Southern Hemisphere teams can come up and play, whether it's the second Six Nations. There's obviously cancelled games that they or whether Ireland go to Australia, but there's obviously cancelled games that need to be replayed so that the RFU aren't handing out refunds for tickets, or, you know, that they can get their television revenue and their prize money and just start getting some flow back into their coffers.
Yeah, and obviously the international game is their cash cow, and because they've control of the provinces, it's straightforward from an Irish point of view, but we know the difficulties that they have in England and France in controlling the clubs. Any idea of what their view is on a new global calendar?
Well, I don't think they like the global calendar. I don't think they're against the idea of a global calendar, but, you know, it does seem like the one that's proposed, which is basically a calendar year calendar where you play, I think it will be January, February club, then you play your Six Nations and it will be Championship in March and April. So that Six Nations will shift back by a month. Then you play club rugby through from April down to September. Then you play international in October and November. That very much suits the Southern Hemisphere clubs because it's aligned with their season already. And it's asking clubs in this part of the world to play through their summer, which obviously is not the tradition in rugby. France shuts down in August. You know, people leave where they live to go elsewhere. That's not going to suit big clubs like Racing Metro or Racing 92. You know, as I say, like, you know, it's a difficult thing to do, to shift to a summer season. It hasn't necessarily been massively successful for Super League and Rugby League, some would argue it is, but, you know, it definitely is a big challenge, and it will be a challenge for in Ireland as well. So they've basically thrown it out at the French, but I think there's another round of negotiations to go, so no doubt there's a bit more, there's chats going on behind the scenes to try and get people on board. Like, the symmetry of it seems to run well. Like, the season doesn't really, has never made sense. And having the two hemispheres aligned would allow us to maybe have a World Club Championship, which seems to be on the cards either once every 4 years. And it would be amazing to see Leinster play the Crusaders or Munster play the Hurricanes or something like that. You know, that those kind of things would be really worth seeing. But, you know, playing through the summer and giving up your spots in the calendar is a big price to pay for rugby in this part of the world. And while our view, you know, are pretty, you know, Philip Brown was on with Keith in their studios a couple of weeks ago and you know, said that they were willing to go with the flow on it because, you know, there's a will across the world to kind of get this thing aligned. There's a lot that we could lose as well from an Irish rugby point of view.
Yeah, all our rugby coverage is always with thanks to Vodafone Team of Us, everyone in. Rory, great stuff.
Thanks, Nathan.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.